go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Boland.
Ben, we've got an interesting topic, or at least I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a title, I guess, maybe to a video that Rolls-Royce produced, a film, a short film, about 21st century legends. And one of these legends, the title of the program is The Man Who Became a Paint.
Ah, yes. Michael Fuchs.
Yeah, Fuchs. And it's spelled F-U-X. Fuchs is how you pronounce that.
Pronounce it Fuchs.
That's right. Be nice. And it's a very fascinating story. I mean, this thing, I didn't really think there was going to be a whole lot more to the. I mean, it's an interesting title, of course.
Sure.
And it turns out that there's more to this than just what you see in the short film or short clips that, that Rolls-Royce has produced. If you investigate the man himself, Michael Fuchs, fascinating guy, really. And I think we're going to talk about him as well as the story of how, well, the Fuchs name became to be a paint at the Rolls-Royce factory.
Yes. And let's see. Let's start when Michael Fuchs did not inherit money. Mm-hmm. He didn't he's not using his grandparents' company's money to buy a lot of cars, but he does have quite a few cars. In fact, he started out of rather humble means when his family immigrated to the U.S. from Cuba in 1958. Mm-hmm. He was around 15 years old at the time, and he said that his whole family lived in a one-bedroom apartment, seven stories up in Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah, and he had kind of an early interest in automobiles, too.
Yeah.
And so he kind of thought, well, what can I do, you know, to make some money? Because here I am, I'm 15 years old. Good work ethic. I mean, he says he's got to get something going here. So he decides to launch his first business, which is a tire and battery store. Mm-hmm. And the crazy thing about this is that he found a two-car garage to rent, and he got tire breakers, which are, you know, machines, not really machines, but just, well, I guess machines,
yeah,
to break tires off of rims. But they were the manual type, and he had got them for free from a company that had switched over to the automatic type. You know, the ones that, that you could just, you know, they're pneumatic, I guess, mm-hmm, or, you know, something like that, or hydraulic possibly. And then he offered to take, used tires from dealerships or, you know, other car lots.
And batteries.
Oh, yeah, and used batteries as well. And then he would charge the batteries, or if you know, they had to be scrapped, he could scrap them for the lead and make money that way. You know, he'd cap these tires, sell them as used. He made, you know, a pretty decent profit on this first venture. And again, he's only 15 or 16 years old.
Yeah, let's point out he's 17 years old when he gets this first business rolling. I think he's 16 when he's working on it.
Okay.
And then by the time he's 20, he's gone through several small businesses.
Yeah, that's incredible. Like, by the time he's 20, he's bought and sold several what they called small ventures. So he's got small businesses that are going that he's actually had, you know, enough, I guess, enough customer base to be profitable and to sell to somebody. So, you know, on early on, this guy, he's really making a splash in the automotive world, I guess, because I think a lot of these were automotive related, ventures that he was in early on. And then later, you know, he decided that he's gonna kind of work on becoming, a manager. He needed to work on his managerial skills.
Right. This is where he took a job selling auto products at Sears, right?
Correct, yeah. And that kind of led to many other department stores as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the time he was 30, he was vice president at the Hecht Company in D.C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that Hecht Company, I looked that up. That's a company, a department store that merged into Macy's in about 2006. So there's no more Hecht Company, but at one point, Michael Fuchs was vice president at the Hecht Company. So, you know, he's clearly moving up. I mean, and this is in Washington, D.C., so he's kind of moving around the United States as well. But again, he's working this retail, you know, department store chains, I guess, for all they're worth, you know, trying to get experience, trying to understand how to manage people and products. And, one thing that he realized early on, you know, when he was doing this is like, he saw these representatives coming in and said, you know, these guys are doing something right. They've got big cars. Obviously got a lot of money. I want to be that way. So what do I need to do? And he decided to become a manufacturer's rep. And early on, I guess, it's kind of his introduction to the textile company.
Yeah.
He worked as a sales manager for a Japanese wholesale linen company. And that was his jump into this textile industry. And it was while he was there that he had a great idea.
Yes. I would say he had two great ideas. One was that he decided to go back into business for himself.
True.
And the other was something called the Snuggle Bag.
Yeah, and this is interesting because even today these are sold, right? Now, this is like, I'm going to call this like his third business, his main business, I guess.
Okay.
Even though he had several others between like when he was 17 and 20, they don't really list how many there were. But, you know, this snuggle bag thing, if you really think about this, you know what this is, right, Ben?
I mean, it's pretty much a Snuggie, right?
It is a Snuggie, yeah. And it was fantastically popular. And I think a lot of our listeners can remember just back a few years, when, you know, this entire group of Snuggies, I guess, came out, you know, the blankets with arms and, you know, bags that you could zip up and everything. Cause that was his idea, the one that you could zip up.
A blanket
you could zip around you. And it was fantastically successful in that first year. And they had something like $72 million in sales in the first year alone.
Yeah, but as we know, that one bottomed out a few years later.
Yeah, just 3 years later, bankrupt, which is amazing. I mean, he calls it his first business failure. So, you know, he learned a lot of lessons from that. He wasn't going to give up, said he had to move on. So, you know, and he's got this kind of mantra that he's repeating to himself that you can get anywhere if you want as long as you're focused. And he remained focused on what he wanted, and he wanted success. He wanted to be, you know, a successful businessman. So he goes back into the retail industry. He becomes a carpet buyer at a place called the Broadway Department Store in Los Angeles.
And he invents layaway for that carpet industry.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, no one had thought of that until that point. And I'm not sure exactly what year this is, you know, that we're talking here, but it couldn't have been that long ago. But they didn't have any kind of these, a deferred payment plan?
Yeah, it's not really accurate for me to call it layaway. It's more like financing.
Okay, for carpet, though.
Mm-hmm.
Carpet. I strange business to think that they never really had anything like that, but I guess they do. And so then, again, he decides, I'm going to take what I've learned here. I'm going to become a buyer. And he founds another company that's called MFA Marketing. And he starts importing rugs and other products for himself. And I think those products were, of course, they were rugs. There were shower curtains, placemats, things like that from India.
Yeah.
And, gosh, Ben, he made a profit from his first sale was something like $500,000.
Yeah, and this was back in the 80s, I think. But as he was enjoying life high on the hog in 1985, his sister-in-law called him because she worked for a place called BioClinic.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and they were a producer of polyurethane foam egg crate mattresses for the hospital sector. And the thing is, the company executives from that BioClinic business wanted to somehow enter the consumer market, and they needed someone to kind of assist them, someone to get them into the consumer market. Mm-hmm. And Michael Fuchs said, you know what? I'll raise my hand. I'll step forward and volunteer for that. So that's what he did.
He said, "I'm your Huckleberry." And it turned out that he was completely correct. This is a quotation from him. At the end of the second year, he says, "We were in all of the major big box stores and had almost $80 million in business."
Amazing. So he, $80 million in business again, in business after the second year alone with these mattresses. Now mattresses come back later because that's an important part of this guy's life at this point.
Ah, yes.
But, again, we're at like, I'll count as at his business number six at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's opened and failed several businesses to this point. Some have been successful, mildly successful.
Sure. Some more than others.
Some much more than others, yeah. Now this latest venture, with this polyurethane egg crate mattress business that he was running, lasted about 10 years. And he said then the company was sold and the product started to get cheap. He didn't want to stick around anymore. So, you know, after 10 years of doing this, he moved on to other things in the bedding industry, I guess. He wanted to remain in the bedding industry because he knew there's a lot of money to be made there.
People have to sleep, Scott.
Exactly. And so he founded a company that I think a lot of people are going to recognize. It's called Sleep Innovations, and he founded that in 1996.
Yep, and Sleep Innovations started making what's called viscoelastic mattresses, pillows, mm-hmm. foam toppers for atop your mattress. And he said that, this is interesting, the product had to be good. but the packaging had to be great.
Now, this really stuck out to me as well in the story is that, you know, that carries along with him in up till today, as a matter of fact. You know, the product is great. The packaging is even greater. You know, and that's his idea is that, you know, as long as I can gain some type of attention on the shelf, you know, at the retail location, I'm going to get people to look at my product. And once they see it, they're going to realize that it is a great product. They're going to want to buy it. And it's a formula that's really worked for him.
And so they go from $3,000 in the first year of this to selling it in 2005 for $300 million. Oh, well, it was doing $300 million in sales. They probably bought it for more than that because now Michael Fuchs is a philanthropist.
Yeah, that's right. Now they sold it for sold Sleep Innovations for $300 million. Well, it had $300 million in sales, I should say, when they sold it.
Sure.
That doesn't mean it sold for that much. But he had a 5-year non-compete. He opens up his 8th business, which is his current business, which is called Comfort Revolution. And, you know, so this is like in 2011. So this is pretty recent here. Again, mattresses, mattress toppers, you know, pillows made of memory foam, things like that. You know, there's a certain product that his company produces called Hydrolux Gel Technology. And, I guess that's a big deal in
sure.
the Comfort Revolution business, you know, in the mattress industry. And, again, he's still focused on fantastic packaging, and that's what he really is. He's got a real eye for detail, and that I think is something that we're going to see in just a little while.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to really pay off as far as you know, like the way he deals with what we already told you with Rolls Royce.
But before we get to that, I think it is time, my friend. Speaking of fantastic things, mm-hmm. to tell me. What you've been reading?
Oh yeah, that's right. I have been. I've been listening to an audio book, and it's been. It's been pretty interesting. It's something from Audible.com, and the title is "Thinking Small: The Long Strange Trip of the Volkswagen Beetle," and it's written by Andrea Hoyt or Hyatt, I think is how you say it. It's a long book. It's 15 hours and 59 minutes, so almost 16 hours long.
Yeah,
but and kind of funny for a you know, book that's called Thinking Small. But it's all about the Volkswagen Beetle and how they say that sometimes, you know, thinking small allows you to solve these enormous problems.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what the Volkswagen Beetle did initially. And that's what it's done all along. And they say that this whole concept, this thinking small, is a real simple concept that, well, I'll just read from the description here. It says it rocketed the VW Beetle to success and kind of served as an avatar of American style, freedom, and a household brand and a global icon. So, and I think I agree with that. I mean, I say that, you know, everybody knows the Volkswagen Beetle. You can picture that in your mind instantly if I say Volkswagen Beetle.
Sure.
You know that classic shape, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's also about how it inspired the ad men on Madison Avenue, one of which was William Birnbach, who was one of the guys that inspired the characters in the, you know, the television program Mad Men.
Mad Men.
Yeah.
He's
inspiration for, I mean, he's just like these guys in real life, though. There's a whole separate podcast about William Birnbach, really.
Okay.
But one of his most notable ad campaigns was this Think Small ad campaign. It was for the Volkswagen Beetle. And, I mean, they talk about the Woodstock Nation and how, you know, that played into that kind of love and hippie culture. And, also, how it was later reimagined for, you know, I guess the hipster generation, you know, the kind that
right.
we see now and,
sure.
even the retro design. But, you know, it's just all about how it's easily one of the most recognizable cars in the world, but a lot of people really don't know the origins of the Volkswagen Beetle and the history of it and where it's been in this long, strange journey.
And speaking of long, let me just reiterate, I have encountered this before. It is, as you said, 15 hours long. This is, I'm going to rate it cross country.
Cross country, yeah, it's a 16-hour book.
16 hours, pardon
yeah.
me.
Oh, yeah, it's a long one.
Let me not be remiss. There's an extra hour there. However, you might be saying, wow, that sounds cool, but how can I get in on this, you guys? We have good news for you guys. If you go to audiblepodcast.com/carstuff, you can sign up today for a free audiobook download of your choice. We're not saying it has to be Think Small.
No, no, no. But there's, in fact, there's 100,000 titles to choose from. So, you know, you've got a world of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you that I think this one is a good one for our listeners. I think that they're going to enjoy this, this Think Small book.
Yeah, that or, any of the Henry Ford stuff we've mentioned before
of
is
course.
Also a great read.
Of course.
Great listen.
Love all that biography stuff too.
So check it out. Let us know what you think. And now it is time for us to turn back to Michael Fuchs, The Man Who Became a Paint.
Yeah, and I promise you, we're gonna get to the Rolls Royce angle of this, but this guy is such a fascinating character. He's really there's so much to his story. I really would like to sit down with this guy and talk to him.
Yeah, and there's a reason we're giving all this context of him growing up, because I'm sure there are a couple people listening going, "Hey guys, I'm interested, but where's the car stuff?"
Yeah,
right?
It's coming. It's coming.
On the way.
It's coming. It's coming real soon because, you know, we mentioned this.
We left off with Comfort Revolution.
Yeah, that's right. Comfort Revolution. And I found out that in 2012, he sold just a minority interest in his business to Sealy. And a lot of people recognize Sealy as a brand of mattress.
Sure, Sealy Posturepedic.
Exactly. The Stearns and Foster brand or the Bassett brands. And they've got just a small portion of that, but, you know, it allows him to go to an international level, I guess.
Right.
And,
there's distribution there.
Exactly. And in fact, he's got a big factory, a big distribution facility in Belmont, Mississippi. It's something like a, you know, 500,000 square foot manufacturing and distribution center. And their goal is to bring almost everything to the United States and produce everything here eventually.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, he's fascinating. I mean, he's just, I really like stories about people who make something from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And really pull themselves up, you know, with the bootstraps and just they're driven to succeed. And this is one of those guys that is just completely driven to succeed. He everything he does, he's thinking about the next step or even two steps beyond that.
And I respect that, but that's not the primary reason I respect him. And I'll get to that before we close the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's time for us to talk about his amazing career in relation to the automotive world, because growing up, says Michael Fuchs, I bought clunkers because I couldn't afford anything else. I promised myself that one day, when I could, I'd get them all.
Yeah.
Those being cars, not enemies.
I love stories like this because let me tell you something about his little collection here, and I shouldn't say little. Michael Fuchs owns 129 vehicles at the time this article was written. This is an article from, we're going through kind of paraphrasing an article from, I think it's called The Bed Times.
Yeah.
Is where we found this kind of biography piece on him.
Mm-hmm.
He owns at this time 129 vehicles, including, this is not all of them, 25 Ferraris, mm-hmm. 12 Porsches, 11 Aston Martins, and 6 Rolls-Royce cars. And now that's just 54 cars.
Mm-hmm.
He has 75 other cars, Ben, that we haven't even mentioned. They're not even categorized here in this article. I'm sure that it's a fascinating collection.
He's got some crown jewels, too.
I bet. Yeah,
he's got that Ferrari FXX.
True. Yep. One of only 30 ever built. And when he takes these around, displays them at charity events, which we're going to talk about in a little bit here. But they always draw a big crowd. He's got a storage facility, a 30,000 square foot garage at a place that he calls, this is amazing, his house, he calls it the Horsepower Farm, which is his home in Milford, New Jersey. And eventually, the goal is to have these cars be part of a museum with all the proceeds going to, you know, the charities of his choice. I think one of them is Miami Children's Hospital in Florida.
Yes, this is my primary favorite thing about Michael Fuchs is, sure, it is commendable to be a self-made person, as you said,
mm-hmm.
pulling oneself up by the bootstraps. It is even more commendable. I think it speaks to an even higher quality of character when you make it and you decide to participate in philanthropy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'm not saying that I think Bill Gates or Warren Buffett or Michael Fuchs are perfect people, but that is absolutely one of the best things you can do, is help make the world a better place, help the disadvantaged, and along with this promise to himself as a child to get every car, he also said that when he became wealthy, he would help others who weren't as lucky because he's never forgotten where he came from or how hard it was to get where he is.
And that's absolutely what he's doing because he is very philanthropic, I guess, is the way best way to say that. I mean, he gives a lot of money and time and materials, I guess, to mostly children. He focuses on children's charities and to people who are underprivileged, people who are, of course, ill. In fact, in 2004, he founded something called the Michael Fuchs Foundation, and that donates to the Miami Children's Hospital in Florida that we mentioned. I think he's also funded missions for Operation Smile, which is, you know, one of those places that offers surgeries for children with cleft palates.
Sure, other facial deformities, which wouldn't ordinarily be affordable for those kids to fix.
I think it's something like 200,000 surgeries at this point, you know, at the time this article is written, that Operation Smile has funded or provided. So, you know, a lot of things, good things going on here, and there's more. He even donates to the Children's Cancer Caring Center.
The Ronald McDonald House.
Yeah, the Breast Cancer Research Foundation.
And for Florida law enforcement officers.
Yeah, for officers that were injured in the line of duty. So it's not just children, but it's mainly focused on children. And he says, I mean, one of the quotes here from him is that, and I thought this was really nice, he says, it's more than about giving money. He just wants to be involved and see what's happening firsthand. And even though it's heartbreaking sometimes, it can also bring a, you know, tremendous amount of joy. And I think, you know, watching his interviews, because I've watched some video clips of this guy at this point, he's truly happy and I guess maybe happiest when he's giving. It seems like, and I guess I haven't really seen him at work maybe, but the guy is genuinely, he seems genuinely like a good guy. He really wants to help these kids. He wants to help, you know, the people that are underprivileged or sick, and he's got the means to do it.
And he is, make no mistake, very much a hands-on person. Now, finally, we get here. We mentioned many of the cars he owns, but we did not mention his Rolls-Royce, which is where he became a paint.
Yeah, and this is what that's what all this has led up to. I mean, you gotta understand where he came from, you know, the immigrant from Cuba in 1958 at 15, you know, trying to scrounge around for used tires and used batteries and things like that.
It's important, I think, to show that evolution because we don't want to make it seem like he's just some guy who never worked for a dime.
No, he's not
cars.
Not a silver spoon in the mouth kind of guy. You know,
right.
he was born, you know, with I guess meager means, and he's really risen up, and he's a self-made man, and I want to point that out because, you know, this really gets into some amazing stuff. I mean, he's really asking quite a lot of the Rolls-Royce company, the motor car company, and there's a whole division of the Rolls-Royce company that is. I guess, specially made for these types of requests, right?
Right. We would be talking here about Rolls-Royce Bespoke Division, which, for people not familiar with the terminology, that's a bit classier way of saying customizable or made to order.
Bespoke. I think we've mentioned that maybe in, you know, we're talking about the Morgan three-wheelers. I think you can buy a bespoke edition. You know, it has the hand-stitched leather and it has, you know, a couple of different paint and things like that. It's very customized. And really, that's customizing for someone who's very detail-oriented. They want something very specific, but it's not so much that, you know, you can pull a piece off of the shelf and put it on. It's more like, I want specifically this type of wood in this type of inlay in this pattern on this door panel.
Right, or even just a very small, subtle change. I would like a different threading of the interior leather on the back seat, you know?
Exactly. And I've got a short list of some wants and creations from the Rolls-Royce Bespoke Division.
Yeah, and it could also be something extreme, like if you see in the video, in the short clip there, as they talk about the department, one of the things that the Rolls-Royce employees show off is a handmade, it looks like it's a dining set.
I do. And you know what I think it is? I'm going to jump ahead here, but I think it's a picnic set.
Picnic set.
Yeah, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. That's a fantastic example.
Oh, yeah. Let me set you up, though. So Michael Fuchs takes it to the next level.
He does, yes. And the thing is that Rolls-Royce, you know, they produce these videos. Now, they produced five videos called 21st Century Legends, which I'm going to describe in just a minute. But they were all created in, I think, around 2010. 2010 was when they done. And I'll describe all five of them briefly in a minute. But one of the videos was again, it was called The Man Who Became a Paint, and it really stuck out to us because that has to deal with this guy, Michael Fuchs. And it starts out by saying, you know, that all, you know, all Rolls-Royce cars are known for their individually crafted and highly tailored cars, right? You know, they're very specific to the owner's needs and wants.
Mm-hmm.
However, this bespoke team are accustomed to even more unusual requests and very specific requests. They want unusual and extremely demanding. I don't mean to say it this way, because if you've got that kind of money to throw on one car and you want, you know, a teak deck on the back where the convertible top lowers, and you want it to have a certain design.
Sure.
In it, you know, your I don't know if it's your family crest or whatever it would
be.
Yeah,
you're paying for it.
Exactly, you're paying for it, and if that's a specific request, and they can do it, and they think they're happy to do it, they like this type of challenge, really.
Uh-huh.
The whole bespoke team does, but it's interesting to see how, you know, they said, you know, when he's around. They and in fact, I'll just quote the guy's name is Thomas Jefferson, who is the bespoke sales manager.
Yeah, this is a different Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, he's not speaking from beyond the grave. this is a different Thomas Jefferson, but again, at the Goodwood factory for Rolls. He says the Fuchs cars are the most bold, ambitious, bespoke mm-hmm. creations that we create. And so he's saying that, you know, even beyond what we normally do, which is pretty, you know, pretty detailed.
Yeah.
We go beyond that for something for the Michael Fuchs cars. And he says when Mr. Fuchs rolls into Goodwood, it's all hands on deck. Everybody knows that he's come in with a boatload of requests.
And a vision.
That's the thing. This guy, remember I said about the packaging, mm-hmm. how he's got this this real detail-oriented aspect to his character?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, that carries over right into his cars, of course. And, you know, I guess maybe the best way to say this is kind of comment about how he sees this car, because he's interviewed in this this Man Who Became a Paint mm-hmm. Film, and he says that, you know, nothing's safe. He says, no, you know, there's not going to be any wood on my car. I want it to be all carbon fiber, but instead of normal carbon fiber, which is black or gray,
I want red.
He wants red. He wants a red carbon fiber weave, and it's something that they had never done.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he's challenging them, and he says that, you know, when I challenge people, when I make people stretch, that's when all their talent comes out. And he says, you know, I do it for, you know, because I want it. But he says, I also like to see what they're capable of. And he's like, and I think he does that probably in his business, I would assume.
Sure, habitually, I'm sure.
I'm sure. To his managers, he says, you know, I'm going to challenge you, but you know what? This is going to create a better product for us, and you're going to be a better person for it. And I think that the bespoke people are feeling the same way. I think there's kind of a synergy here that, you know, between them. Mm. I don't like using that word. I shouldn't have said synergy.
I thought it was appropriate.
Okay, maybe, but I guess
symbiosis.
That's a better word. I was going to say one that feeds off of the other. In that, you know, he challenges them. They create what he wants. They feel good about themselves. They can then offer something similar to someone else, but not exactly identical, because that's not what the bespoke team is all about.
Right. They're all sort of fingerprints. They're your Rolls-Royce fingerprints.
Exactly.
Just to get an idea, before we forget, can you list off some of the customizations people get?
Yeah, sure I can. Now, these aren't specifically on the Michael Fuchs cars,
uh-huh.
but some of the past bespoke creations are, like, let's say, a mother-of-pearl clock, you know, that someone requested, a humidor in the glove box. And when I say humidor in the glove box, I don't mean someone just took a humidor and you know, plunked it into the glove box.
They turned the glove box into a humidor.
They did, and it's integrated in a way that, you know, it's very mechanical, very, very beautiful in its operation. It's not anything like you've ever seen for any other humidor, and it's one of a kind. The picnic set that we mentioned. Now,
Yeah. You
saw that, and you thought it was a dining set. It's specially tailored to fit inside a custom box that the Rolls-Royce created. And you can imagine it looks like a fine piece of luggage, maybe.
Yeah.
Everything is just exactly fit into its position. There's a place for everything and everything in its place in this thing.
Which I appreciate.
And it's gorgeous. It's, I don't know if it must be, I don't know if it's stainless or if it's silver.
Yeah.
I would assume silver.
See, that's why you can't really blame me for not thinking
no.
it was, for not knowing it was a picnic set.
Not at all. It looks like something that you would see on a table at a castle or something.
Yeah, it's the most posh picnic ever.
It's really, really nice. And I'm sure that you can do a search for a Rolls-Royce bespoke picnic set and you'll find it. There's an illuminated Spirit of Ecstasy, the hood ornament that somebody here requested. And that's kind of unusual because most of them are made out of, metal. There's also mother of pearl inlays and control dials, personalized coach lines, which are the, we call them pinstripes.
Oh, okay.
Coach lines.
Mm-hmm.
And, let's see, what else? Teak deck that I think I mentioned. That's one option that they had, created for somebody, that was where the, if you have a drop head, which is a convertible, that's what we call a convertible, the cover that goes over that is made out of teak, and it looks like the deck of a ship, a sailing ship, maybe.
Yeah.
Just some fantastic creations come out of this bespoke team, and I really think that our listeners, if they searched it, they would be shocked to see some of these things because they're all one of a kind. So unless you happen to see it at mm-hmm. a show, you'd never really come across these things.
And your best chance to see the Michael Fuchs cars would probably be at Pebble Beach if you're a car person, mm-hmm. or one of his many charity events in the East Coast and especially in the Florida area. He had a long list of very specific things and to work on with his customized Rolls Royces. He has more than one. That plural use was correct.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you explained drop head there. We should note that in addition to things like red carbon fiber and leather floors, which just...
Oh, no.
Yeah, he got leather floors.
Yeah, I don't know if that sounds like a good idea or not.
I guess you just can't wear your shoes in the car. I don't know.
Leather floors, okay.
I guess I would have like a special pair of of shoes. You know how like in some cultures they have special shoes
sure.
for different rooms? I would have that. I would have car shoes.
All right.
And they would match the Rolls.
Equal softness.
So anyway, we get around to it. He had one of his very specific requests was a shade of paint.
Yeah, and it had to match the red that was in the carbon fiber weave that we had mentioned before. Now, they had never done this red weave, so, that was a process in itself. They had to figure out the color they use in the weave itself, the pattern, that it would appear. And, again, it replaces all the wood that you would normally have in a drop head. So this is already a big undertaking by the bespoke team.
It's a lot of material.
And he says, I want this dark candy apple red color. It has to be a very rich, deep, vibrant red. It's not the same color everywhere.
It's got to be uneven, like an actual red apple.
Yeah, like when you're looking at it, the light reflects off of different areas, and if you look across the hood, it looks almost black. That's the way this car is. It's a very, very deep, rich red, but it's not a color that Rolls-Royce normally mixes,
and by normally you mean ever.
Yeah, and they normally, I guess normally I keep saying that, but they offer every color under the sun, really. So this is just a matter of mixing the appropriate type of paint for him. And they went back and forth with him several times with the carbon fiber weave, the leather, the stitching, everything was laid out in front of him. And I think one day he said that he laid it all out on his office floor, and they finally sent him the paint samples, and he had several to choose from. And I think there was a long back and forth process between them with that, and finally they arrived on this decision and said, that's the color, that's the one that I want, this is the car that I want, let's build it. So they got it done.
And at the end of the long process, the folks at the bespoke department and Michael Fuchs got together, and when they displayed the car, when they presented it, the bespoke department had a special surprise for Mr. Fuchs. They had named this color after him. It was the world premiere of the, probably one of the most exclusive paints in the world, technically speaking, Fuchs Candy Red.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about this is that it's not available to anybody else except for Michael Fuchs.
No one else can have it.
Rolls-Royce says, we're putting this on the shelf, and it's a proprietary mix, and it's going to be named for him, and he's the only one who is allowed access to this. It's named in his honor.
Mm-hmm.
It's reserved exclusively for use by him and by Rolls-Royce at Goodwood. So, just strictly for the Michael Fuchs cars. Now, will that hold up? I mean, will eventually Michael say, I'd like to offer this to a friend. I'd like, this to be available to the public, as part of the legacy.
Or an auction for a charity or something.
Oh, that's a fantastic idea. If he were to say that, I'll allow one more car to be created with this color, can you imagine the money that would draw? Like, I think that would be a big seller.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Exclusivity is attractive. Maybe it would work, but the amazing thing is that this is maybe not technically the most expensive paint because there literally is not a price you can put on it.
No.
Unless for some reason, as you said, he decided to allow it, or maybe if he decided to sell one of his cars, which I don't think he will, maybe Fuchs Candy Red will just stay in the family.
Could be, and it just could remain on the shelf and just be a keepsake for Rolls Royce from now on. Not that they're going to have some mixed and ready, but it's the mix, I guess, the recipe for it.
Sure.
No one knows exactly what's in Fuchs Candy Apple Red, Fuchs Candy Red is what it's called.
Candy Red.
Yeah.
And how they get that? How they get that variation?
Exactly. So it's very exclusive color. It's just a neat story. The whole thing all around is really cool. And I mentioned that it's part of one of these 21st Century Legends films that Rolls Royce had created in 2010.
Oh yes, one of the five.
And I can just briefly, if you like. I mean, I think I'm kind of done with what we're going to talk about Michael Fuchs and the color. Let's just quickly summarize the other four.
Yeah.
And we'll leave it at that. How about that?
Yeah. Oh, I do want to get on one like ending rant.
Sure.
But it'll be brief.
A rant, huh? That sounds interesting.
I'm sorry, more of a soapbox.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. So, all right. This is, you can find this, these clips, these films at RollsRoyceMotorCars.com, and it's under 21st Century Legends, and there's five of them. And the first one is called The Prince and the Coachline Painter, and it's about a guy named Mark Court, who is the coachline painter for Rolls-Royce Motor Cars. And we've said coachline is, like pinstriping.
Yeah, think of pinstripes.
He uses squirrel hair brushes and does them all by hand. Every single car is pinstriped by hand.
That's amazing.
Every car that receives pinstripes, I should say.
He has steady surgeon hands.
He's done thousands of these things. Now, you see him mixing paints with eyedroppers and, prepping the brushes and, really, really getting into his craft, I guess, because he says, he proudly says, you're not going to see a single join line in these cars. Each pull is what he calls a pull, from one end to the next when he pulls the brush across the surface.
Sure.
He says you will not see a join line in any of these cars. You can look at it as carefully as you want. You're not going to find a join line, from where I've ended one line and begun my next line.
So that's the first one. The
Prince and the Coachline Painter. Okay. And he's very, very proud of his work. That's Michael Court, and rightly so.
He deserves it.
The next one is called The Ghost in the Photograph. And this is pretty interesting. It's really all based on a photograph that was from the first ever Spanish Grand Prix in 1913. And it shows the winner, and his name, I'll mess up his name here, Marquis Calais de Salamanca. That's really probably way off. In his Rolls-Royce Silver Ghost. And, of course, he won the Spanish Grand Prix in 1913 in his Silver Ghost. And the thing about the photo is he's got this real serene expression. And the people at Rolls-Royce said, this isn't right. He just won this, what would be considered a heroic drive.
Yeah.
He won the Spanish Grand Prix just moments before this. And here he is, like, he looks perfectly calm and relaxed. Why is that? And then they realized that he's relaxed because it was such an easy ride for him. This whole thing, this car was so well put together and so comfortable.
That was relaxing.
It was actually it was kind of a relaxing drive for him. Now,
that's funny.
And they said they've used this photograph they've kind of used it as inspiration to say that, driving a Rolls Royce should be kind of like a timeless experience. It's like, we're saying you should be as calm as this guy was in this 100-year-old photograph after driving in a Grand Prix, whenever you arrive at your destination, even if it's 600 miles away or whatever.
That's brilliant marketing.
It really is. It's fantastic. And it's funny how they use this one photograph to base all that from. The third video or the third film is called The Graceful Little Goddess. And you can imagine what this one's about. It's The Spirit of Ecstasy, the hood ornament.
Uh-huh.
And it's probably, as they say, one of the most recognizable icons of all time. Just very subtle changes over the last 100 years. But what I really like about this, Ben, is they talk about how they actually make them individually.
Oh, cool.
How they build these things, how they're cast, through, I think it's stainless steel that they're cast in today. It's a really cool process. I mean, they show like all the wax molding and everything that goes involved in it. It takes something, I want to say it takes like 1 week per statue to create these things. Now, just the whole ornament. With all the filing and the polishing, and you know they're going over them literally with magnifying glasses.
And those are frequently stolen as well as foot ornaments.
Yeah, that's why they have that feature, right?
Where you can put it, it recedes into the vehicle. Oh man, we covered that. Was it the Rolls Royce Phantom?
We did. Yeah,
that's where we hit that on. I'm stopping the train. I'm just still very excited about that.
That's okay. I'm excited about that too. That's a cool feature.
Yeah. All right. So. Number five?
Four. Because, and the fifth one is The Man Who Became a Pain.
That's
so we
right.
won't talk about that
okay.
one. But the last one I want to talk about is Silence at the Racetrack. And Promise is the last one, but it's really interesting as well. This one is kind of fun to watch and listen to, because, I don't know, I think it goes all the way back to like the 1950s. When they talk about the 1950 Rolls-Royce cars, how at 60 miles per hour, the loudest thing you could hear was the ticking of the clock inside the car. Right, so that was the that's impressive.
That's cool.
That's good engineering. I mean, especially in the mid 1950s. But now they even have a higher benchmark, Ben, for the 21st century. Of course, the car will do 0 to 60 in 4.7 seconds. And the guy that was driving it was a race driver, and he said, of course, he's describing it as he's talking to you in the camera in the car as he's doing this at a racetrack. 0 to 60 in 4.7 seconds. He says there's a lovely growl from the engine. And then everything goes completely silent. There's nothing, and he's talking to you, and it's as if he's in a studio like we're in right now. It's dead quiet in the car.
That's cool.
On the racetrack. And then he pushes the car up to 140 miles per hour, and he doesn't even have to raise his voice at all. And again, it's straight audio right from inside the cockpit. It's very impressive. If you've never been in a car like that, the completely like a sound chamber. Amazing.
That's awesome. You know what? Instead of doing my soapbox, I think that's a good note for us to end in. You want to just jump in some listener mail?
I took too long, didn't
no,
I?
No, you didn't take too long.
All right,
didn't
well, then I'm ready. Long. Let's do some listener mail.
All right, here we go, Scott. We have Runal, R-U-N-A-L, from Chicago writing in to say, I think the subject line says it all, but maybe not. Subject line is love the show, and thank you.
Oh, well, thank you.
He says, hey, guys, my weird car thing. You remember we asked for these earlier, Scott?
I do.
My weird car thing is that I have to keep the car I'm in clean on the inside, or I become a rage monster jumping on people, forcing them to clean.
Wow.
It's not pretty. Also, can you guys do an episode on weird car gadgets and Hot Wheels? Thanks, Runal.
Seems like we've had Hot Wheels in our past, and maybe I know we've done some kind of weird car gadgets things.
Yeah,
there's
that one.
There's always more out there, though, and I love to talk about some of those odd things that people have inside their cars.
Mm-hmm.
But one more thing I need to mention.
Yeah.
Clean car thing. I used to be one that kept a meticulously clean car. I think I've got a kid now, and that kind of went out the window. There's Pop-Tart crumbs here and there, and wrappers, and like leftover grass clippings from soccer practice and things like that. So it's not that it's filthy or anything,
right?
But it's not meticulously clean like it used to be.
It's not as clean as you would want it to be.
Yeah, and
whose
I know
car is.
Well, yours, Ben, because
no.
You did a deep cleaning on your Monte Carlo recently, right?
Yeah, I did, but I didn't get to the point where it would be. I have a standing agreement with myself that I'm going to be hanging out at the do-it-yourself car wash once a week with the vacuum, spend some time on the exterior with the rag, but it's still not as clean as I would like. And your car is clean, Scott, because we rode around with Casey earlier this week.
It's relatively clean.
Yeah. Well, I think what we're trying to say, Runal, is that we're on board with the same.
Absolutely. I understand that completely. If that's the way you like to keep the interior of your car and you see someone who just, throws a wrapper down the floor, that can just drive someone who's a clean, I'm going to say a clean freak, but I don't mean it in a despairing way.
Right.
If you're a clean freak about in your car and someone does something like that, it's a sign of disrespect. So I totally understand that.
I feel the same way.
And then there's the opposite. I've been with in other people's cars that are absolutely filthy. You have to move stuff off the floor in order
right.
to put your feet on the carpet, and it doesn't really bother me more than because I know it's not my car, but it's a little discomforting to sit in that. Just a little bit, but I'm okay with it.
This is something I've done that maybe will help you guys when you ride with messy friends or messy family members. You have to watch out. I have gotten in trouble for this before. I'm riding with someone and their car just has a bunch of stuff in it. I like to take some trash with me as I go. And you have to be careful because some people get really offended. But, you know, I had tried to be courteous, but it just made it worse. I was in the car one time with my girlfriend, and she doesn't have a dirty car, but she had a bunch of stuff in it. And she had had this, I think it was like a Starbucks coffee that had been there for clearly a week. And so I thought I was being cool. I was like, hey, you don't need this, right? I'm just going to take it with me because I'm walking by this trash can. And then she said, so what are you saying, that I have a dirty car? So you have to be careful. Just sneak out a couple of pieces of, you know, stuff that's clearly just debris.
You need deep pockets, something like a jacket with big pockets. You can just load them up every time you're in the car.
Deep pockets, confidence, and, you know, a bit of subterfuge.
Sure.
But so it sounds like we're totally on board with this. We do have a weird car gadget subscription. We can always go into some Hot Wheels stuff. But we have one more piece of listener mail before we go out.
Let's hear it.
All right. So Aaron writes to us to say, hi, Scott and Ben. My name is Aaron S. I don't want to say his full last name, you know, just in case.
Fair enough.
From Gulgong, Australia. I may have mispronounced that. I did a Facebook message before, decided to email this time. Just want to say I love the show. You guys do an awesome job every week, and it helps me get through any road trip. I've been going through the whole list of podcasts, my third time going through all of them.
Wow.
This is a super fan here. And heard the Pike's Peak podcast again. I was wondering if you could do a podcast about Sebastian Loeb and his Peugeot 208 T16 and his smashing of the previous record. Thought it would be a good vehicle to learn about. Anyway, keep up the awesome work. Would be good to hear back from you.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess we have to maybe update our Pike's Peak episode.
Yeah.
With some new records, because they've gone full pavement there, as we know.
Right.
And I think some records are falling quick.
Yeah, that's true. It's a brave new world over there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Aaron, Renault, thank you guys so much for writing to us. Thank you, everyone else here, for listening. And we hope you enjoyed our story about the man who became a paint. Bukes Candy Red.
Yeah. You know, Ben, I'm still kind of reeling from three times through every episode. That's a lot of episodes.
That's so impressive.
Aaron's a glutton for punishment.
I guess so. We have some stinkers.
Those are the early days. We've refined it quite a bit, and maybe not our pronunciations, but
sure.
I think the shows are getting better.
Yeah. Wow. We've been at this for a while.
Yeah, many years.
We're going to head out, and please contact us if you have an idea for an upcoming episode or topic suggestion. You can drop us a line on Facebook. We are Car Stuff. You can find us on Twitter. And you can send us an email directly. Our address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.